Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. I want to talk a little bit more about Majestic 12 and that slippery slope that I referred to previously. Oh, and before I forget, when I kind of stumbled over initials the last time, WSPG stands for White Sands Proving Ground. I should have known that. I did know that, but at the time, I had brain flatulence. What can I say? Donald Schmidt mentioned on my show that there is a secret facility there that deals specifically with alien technology. This is mentioned in the Majestic documents, and I've also heard from other sources who talk about an underground facility there that is ET alien technology related. On the surface, it's known as Cricket Creek, or at least it's one of the locations or facilities there. In our field, there are certain locales, place names that are well-known or infamous. Mars Hill, that looks towards Edwards Air Force Base. You have, of course, the Five Canyons region of Sedona, the M Zone in the Ural Mountains of Russia, the Alaskan Triangle, Archuleta Mesa, etc., Rendlesham Forest. WSPG, White Sands Proving Ground, is one of those places. Considering how long these corporations and deep black elements of the military have been working on alien technology, we should expect that over time they would start to make inroads as to how the technology worked, the physics behind it, potentialities, what can be done with such technology. Please bear with me as I read a couple more documents. I know it could be somewhat tiresome and somewhat of a strain focusing one's attention listening to me read these documents. I think there's a lot of merit to it. There's a lot of nuggets to be found in these documents, and I'll explain. A quick point before I get started, I'm just baffled why somebody like Richard Doty is given a voice. I'm not one for cancel culture. I'm not one for silencing someone's freedom of speech and their First Amendment. But for crying out loud, this guy played a key role in destroying the life of Paul Benowitz. This guy publicly stated on TV during the UFO cover-up live, which was a three-hour event hosted by Mike Farrell of MASH fame. He was in silhouette and his voice was electronically doctored, and Richard Doty was saying, "I will lie to the American people if it's good for the American people." What kind of comment is that? Why would somebody want to get him onto a UFO conference? A guy's got a proven track record of not only sowing disinformation, but perpetrating psychological warfare on a patriotic American who just wanted to get at the truth. And then Paul Benowitz winds up in a loony bin giving electroconvulsive shock therapy. I'm just baffled why the so-called UFO community and these conference promoters, I don't care about them. They'll never invite me to their gigs, and I could care less. But they keep inviting these frauds like that Nick Pope, who wormed his way into the UFO community. He claimed the fame was he was a member of a Nothing Burger of a supposedly MOD agency, British Ministry of Defense, the Flying Complaints Desk, which was really only there for people to complain about low-flying planes and other aerial nuisances, nothing to do with UFOs or aliens. That's complete nonsense. Some of these UFO conference promoters themselves are intelligence assets. They were put in place specifically to ensure a certain cadre, if you will, of limited hangout types, shills, disinformation agents, get a forum in order to speak. Meanwhile, real truth tellers like Larry Warren, oh, they're shut out, they're demonized, they're marginalized, set upon by hordes of trolls. I'll have more to talk about Rendlesham Forest later in this commentary. I've got a lot to say about that, having studied it for decades now and spoken with a principal witness on a number of occasions. I feel qualified to give my 2 cents worth about that subject and how it all ties into Majestic and everything else that I've been talking about, lo, these many years. One last point I want to make before getting started. This notion of UFO disclosure, they're calling it UAP disclosure, whatever, has no meaning if it does not include what we call cryptids, including but not limited to Sasquatch, Dogmen, flying humanoids, etc., etc. A strong case can be made that the UFO alien phenomena is directly related to Sasquatch phenomena. Stan Gordon has proven that, to my satisfaction at least, with his groundbreaking research, Pennsylvania, Ohio, UFO, Bigfoot waves. Likewise, any sort of disclosure that does not deal specifically with the many, many missing people missing as a result, direct result of these UFO alien encounters, that likewise renders whole disclosure movement null and void, as far as I'm concerned. It's those issues are not addressed. And we must have compensation for the many people that were harmed by this. And the harm was doubly inflicted by cover-ups, harassment, abuse, even assassinations to keep all this under a lid. We always hear about reparations today. Well, no one deserves reparations more, as far as I'm concerned, than people who have been abused by this wretched system because of their knowledge of the reality of the alien presence here on Earth. Be they military or civilian pilots who've been silenced and lost their jobs, lost their careers, or your average everyday citizens who have had alien abduction encounters, my lab experiences, and have been harassed, exploited, experimented upon. Likewise, the many witnesses who have had close encounters with alien craft, with aliens who had seen crash retrieval efforts and been intimidated into silence. They all need to be recognized, vindicated, and compensated. Okay, here we go with the reading of the Majestic document. This is dated the summer of 1952, is the best estimate for when this draft was first put together. And it only starts at part three. Conclusions. One, current studies of otherworld visitation are in three phases. A, technology exploitation. B, interplanetary travel. C, cultural communication. Technology exploitation doesn't need much explanation. Interplanetary travel, likewise, you have a very good idea what they have in mind with that. Cultural communication, I would say that has to do with being able to speak and have a dialogue, a liaison, if you will, with these non-human intelligences. And in my view, a big part of the effort to create this cultural communication would be bringing in the National Security Agency. There are other Majestic documents that refer specifically to the Air Force Security Agency, the Army Security Agency, and Naval Security Group. And they were later amalgamated into the National Security Agency. What they would need as a prerequisite, in my view, would be an understanding of the language spoken by the various alien groups and an ability to interpret the alien symbol language, which had been found at a number of crash sites. This would be greatly facilitated by the debriefing. And from the perspective of the military, the helpful cooperation of one or more surviving aliens. If an alien or aliens were interested in cooperating, they might be curious as to the motivation of the alien or aliens in question, but I don't think they would dwell on it for too long. They would, of course, be naturally concerned if there's a double cross in the works, like, okay, the alien is teaching us their language and their culture and their technology. Is there some kind of trap, some kind of stab in the back that will come further down the line? Chances are they didn't really look that far into the future. They just needed answers. And like I've said before, at least where some of these alien groups were concerned, I'm satisfied. I'm absolutely convinced that a lot of these crashes were, if not deliberately intended, to foster a relationship with the military-industrial complex and subvert it from within. Once the military-industrial complex had amassed enough recovered alien technology, a decision by one or more alien groups could have been made. Well, they have some of our survivors, some of our surviving crew members, our people. We might as well make the best out of it and see how we, in turn, could manipulate and exploit the military-industrial complex, who are holding our people, what we would perceive to be aliens, in captivity. Okay, I'm just thinking out loud here as to possible scenarios at that time. What the NSA would need is what they call DEFT in cryptanalysis. And basically what that means is a large volume of, in surface level terms, messages, encrypted, partially decrypted, whatever the case may be. They would need a lot of it. They would need a lot of the encrypted text to work from. It's possible in the recovery and analysis of some of the alien data storage systems, for lack of a better term, the military-industrial complex were able to amass a large amount of the symbol language of the aliens, the various alien groups. Whether some of those alien symbol languages were of a universal nature in the old days, French was the lingua franca of diplomacy. The founding fathers, when they would send their delegates out after they created the United States of America, they typically spoke French to diplomats in Europe. Nowadays, English is pretty much the lingua franca of diplomacy around the world. Lingua franca being a common language, if you will. We see this on Earth. We have trade languages. There's common terms, common language used for trade, for finance, in the business world, et cetera, et cetera. Is it possible that for spacefaring and indeed interdimensional civilizations, aside from mental telepathy, is there some kind of common space symbol language that's used? Well, maybe, maybe not. But I'm sure the NSA would have tried to figure that out. I keep referencing Pierre Sabbach's work as a starting point for all this. Pierre Sabbach, to me, is a real-life Dr. Daniel Jackson. If you're familiar with the Stargate movie and then the subsequent TV shows starting out in Showtime, Stargate SG-1, Dr. Daniel Jackson was a philologist. He studied the origins, meanings of words, of phrases, of terms, going back to their antecedents, to their roots. This is why in the TV show, Daniel Jackson spoke dozens of languages, including very obscure ancient languages. He eventually learned how to speak an alien language, the Gould language, in the TV show, if you remember. Well, the closest thing we have to that in the civilian world would be someone like Pierre Sabbach. And with the help of a friendly and maybe even a coerced alien or two or more, they can begin to decipher what some of these symbols are and build a database, a reference system, and find out what the equivalent words, phrases are in earthly languages. And if there are any roots, root words that have a connection in earth languages going back to the distant past that have any connection with these alien languages. And again, you go back to Pierre Sabbach's work, there seems to be a lot of that. If you study a lot of the, as he has done, the origins of a lot of words in all these various languages. Cultural communication. Okay, let's continue. Point two, on 19 September 1947, the IAC, that's the Intelligence Advisory Committee, JIOA and the JIC, reviewed a top-secret intelligence report titled Report to the President, 1947, Parts 1 through 5, Magic Eyes Only. They have a daytime group 00019-0947. The report mentions, quote, "In compliance with your directive of 9 July 1947, the attached report on flying saucers is respectfully submitted. In consonance with your instructions, advisors from date, Treasury, War, and Navy departments assisted me on a two-month exploratory mission concerning the reality of other world visitation. The principal investigators and storage areas were visited. Successful efforts were made to reach scientists of all levels as measured by their work in classified defense projects. Conferences were held with national security officials and leaders of private industry. Approximately 1,200 memoranda and intelligence reports were considered. The report presents this situation against a global background. My estimates, current and projected, in both the U.S. and allied countries, and recommendations deemed to be sound courses of action for formulating plans and policies in light of recent developments." Interesting that they should mention the State Department. State Department was run by General George Marshall. He became Secretary of State after his stint as Chief of Staff of the Army and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during World War II. The State Department then, as it is now, was awash with communist spies. A number of high-level foreign service officers in the State Department were known communist agents. We know that the OSS at the highest levels, Duncan Lee comes to mind. He was a high-level assistant to General William Donovan. And Duncan Lee passed a lot of classified material to the Institute of Pacific Affairs, which was a front for communist espionage in America. And from the Institute of Pacific Affairs, the classified material made its way to the USSR and the communist China as well. Point being that despite the high level of security, majestic level we're talking about, the information may still have found its way from the State Department to the communist bloc. We know that the NKVD, a predecessor to the KGB, took over from the GRU, Soviet Military Intelligence, the massive espionage effort against the Manhattan Project in America. It was codenamed Enormous. That was the Soviet intelligence code name for the effort to steal secrets from the Manhattan Project. It's quite likely a similar effort on the part of Soviet intelligence was directed at gleaning information about the recovered alien technology obtained by the United States government and military industrial complex. I'd mentioned in the last commentary that General Hoyt Vandenberg, when he became Director of Central Intelligence, it was called the Central Intelligence Group at the time. Prior to that, he commanded the Strategic Services Unit, and he had inherited a large part of the OSS. The possibility exists that along with all those assets, he also inherited, unbeknownst to himself, an existing spy network. That's just strictly conjecture on my part, but the possibility exists. Likewise, it's interesting that the Treasury Department was mentioned. This automatically plugs in the international financial network, the Rothschild banking system, for lack of a better term. Industry was also mentioned. And when we're talking private industry, we're talking the titans of industry, Rockefeller types, right, who are also the same reptiles who run the financial system. So right off the bat, with Treasury, private industry, you can see already, and we'll see more of this with some of the suggestions made by Dr. Theodore von Karman of creating a separate development line, if you will, through private industry, not strictly military anymore, but a strictly a private corporate venture. And that recommendation was made, among others, by Dr. Theodore von Karman, director of the Air Force Scientific Advisory Group. Again, it must be remembered that von Karman not only ran the Scientific Advisory Group at the behest originally of General Henry H. Arnold, and not only did he have his own private jet development company, Aerojet General, he founded the NATO Advisory Group for Aeronautical Research and Development, known as AGARD, AGARD. We're talking a major player here who hardly anyone in our field mentions, Dr. Theodore von Karman. And it was von Karman who founded Jet Propulsion Labs, JPL. It was not Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons was a mere underling of von Karman's. He did not found JPL. That's a surface level conspiracy theory. Getting back to the State Department and the Treasury Department and the OSS, which later was absorbed by the Central Intelligence Group, all of those organizations were riddled with communist spies, all of them that I just mentioned in World War II and after World War II. I remember when George Knapp came back from his visit to the former Soviet Union sometime after the wall went down. He and his team went over there and just got a whole bunch of intel straight from the horse's mouth, as it were. And I distinctly remember a report that Knapp made. I can't remember where I heard it, on Coast to Coast, or it was in a documentary or something, but the information was related to Soviet espionage, which had garnered some of the Roswell material. I distinctly remember like a reference to some kind of KGB intelligence report mentioning that some of the Roswell material was presented to Stalin. Stalin inspected some of the Roswell material. And that tells me that at the highest levels, whether it's in the Atomic Energy Commission, whether it's in the Armed Forces Special Weapons Project, Army Air Force headquarters, somewhere, someone is passing this information. And it is not beyond the realm of possibility, because so much of the information from the Manhattan Project made its way to the Soviets and allowed Kurchatov's team to detonate their first plutonium device, codenamed Joe 1 by the Americans, in September 1949. I think it might have been late August 1949, and then detected early September 1949. At any rate, the speed with which the Soviets under Khrushchev developed their atomic weapon, which was a carbon copy of the Fat Man implosion device, is symptomatic, if you will, of the ability of Soviet intelligence at that time to hemorrhage secrets out of not just Los Alamos, but all these other atomic related facilities. So keep that point in mind. Even if the Russians or the Soviets at that time had not had their own crash retrievals, and in the years subsequent to Roswell and subsequent to the detonation of the first Soviet atomic bomb, somewhere along the line, they probably would have had their own crash retrievals. Sverdlovsk disk is one of the stories that we hear. So we're talking about a race, an arms race, but it wasn't necessarily the classical, by that point, atomic weapons arms chase, arms race rather. But now it was a race to develop and exploit recovered or exchanged alien technology, and I'll get more into that. Suffice it to say for now, the direct involvement of high finance via the Treasury Department as one avenue, and the involvement of these tycoons, these titans of industry who controlled and financed the, by that point, it was the aircraft industry back then rapidly developing into the aerospace conglomerates we see today, aerospace giants. I mean, Jimmy Doolittle was there in his capacity as a consultant from the Shell Corporation, Shell Oil. All right. He was wearing a civilian hat in a lot of these majestic level MIDI meetings. So he's essentially working both for the U.S. government, a secret branch of the U.S. government, but also for a foreign entity, Shell Oil, owned by European bankers, European nobility. Again, and not to beat the horse to death, but it means that the financial world at the deepest, darkest levels is evil and corrupt and Luciferian, as we know, that they were being kept abreast of what's going on from all these different avenues, all these different sources. When you have these people like these Bernard Baruch types, these master manipulator financiers, when they have that much money influence, they can get their hands on any kinds of information they desire or material. So if they decide, these financiers, well, let's make sure that the Soviets over here get their fair share of alien technology, they can arrange that through existing communist espionage networks, because it's all this communistic web of control anyway. They just appear to be huge aerospace giant corporations, but at the top end, they're all run by deep, dark Luciferian shapeshifters in some cases, right? For example, Lockheed, their initial seed money, Lockheed Martin today, it's a historical fact they were funded by the Rothschilds, as were many of the other original aircraft corporations. And remember, there were only a handful. There were only several aircraft development companies at the outset of the aviation era. Post the Wright brothers, there was only a handful of companies in America and in Europe that made airplanes. And the Rothschilds, and to a lesser degree, the Rockefellers, but especially the Rothschilds, funded all of them, okay? So from the beginning, what later predictably morphed into these gigantic aerospace corporations dealing with satellites and beam weaponry and alien technology and weird science, that was lizard-controlled via the Rothschild banking dynasty, demonstrably, provably, from the get-go. And this is why my hypothesis of all this alien technology being given to the humans, that was a baited hook. And you can see the predictable way that it played itself out. And well, we haven't seen the end of it yet, but, you know, fast forwarding to the present and just how horrific the whole situation is, where countless MyLabs are used essentially as slaves to do the bidding of their cosmic masters. You have countless humans underground and off-world held in captivity and used as slaves or as consumables, let's say. I mean, that aspect of it was always there to begin with, the fact that the humans were not at the top of the food chain. That had been going on since time immemorial. It's taken on a beyond an industrial scale now. It's truly an off-world galactic universal enterprise. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Back to the Majestic document. Okay, scrolling further down the page, we see in part 4, under discussion, point A, nature of the investigation. An analysis has been made of the first 100 intelligence reports in the ATIC interrogation reports. ATIC, I presume that means Air Technical Intelligence Center, headquartered right at. And the ULAT exploitation, Majestic Series 1 to 25, prepared by the Military Intelligence Section of General Headquarters Interplanetary Phenomenon Unit, GHQ/IPU, in order to establish what materials of flying saucer intelligence value concerning the ULAT is available in these reports. And ULAT means Unidentified Lenticular Shape Aerodyne that has been designated as ULAT-1. I suppose there was a ULAT-2, et cetera, et cetera. So they don't call it a UFO. It's an unidentified lenticular-shaped aerodyne, at least that type of craft. The report goes on to say, in order to establish What material of flying saucer intelligence value concerning the ULAT is available in these reports? Point number one, the ATIC interrogation reports numbered 1 to 93, the last dated December 1950, present significant information on a broad variety of subjects and areas where witnesses were detained subsequent to the post-1947 incident. Detained. Well, we know that happened to Mac Brazel, the rancher at Roswell. The unpublished documents, redacted kind of, records of interrogation derived from the accumulated reports on interviews of selected witnesses from New Mexico and military personnel involved in removal of evidence. In this digest, primary interest has been paid to information of biomedical intelligence interest, particularly in the BW programs, it's biowarfare. Biomedical intelligence is only one of the substantive fields covered by these interrogation reports. So already they had an eye to using the alien bodies in a biowarfare program. And we know that people have died from coming in contact with some of these aliens just by touching them. That poor guy in Brazil, Virginia, the military guy who jumped out of a car and wrapped his arms around the second little ET that was loose, hauled him back into the car. That guy died a horrible death, a super bacteria. And the terrain theory types are just got their hands over their ears now. No, no, stop. But that guy died in short order of what was described as some kind of a super bacteria. Also, we know from some of the other Majestic reports that some of the SED, Special Engineering Detachment personnel from Sandia, they died by getting too close to some of these alien bodies. When they started seeing these people keel over, the light bulb must have went off over their heads, right? Well, we can exploit this capability. Continuing, I'll reread that part. In this digest, primary attention has been paid to information of biomedical intelligence interest, particularly in the BW programs. BW stands for biowarfare. Biomedical intelligence is only one of the substantive fields covered by these interrogation reports. Point number three, for the most part, the sources interrogated were not trained observers, and their stories indicate they have been subject to the familiar pitfalls common to all eyewitnesses. It must be emphasized that because the interrogators used were not always specialists in this phenomena of celestial sciences, there is much lack of detail. Items beneath it, sentences, partial sentences, such as, I'm guessing the first word is ensued on PSYOP development for utilization of paperclip, specialist, results in new weapons research in areas and chemical agents, mind control, it even says mind control. Topic B, panel's contribution to Majestic. The contribution of the President's Special Panel to the Majestic 12 Project has supplemented information on the ULAT program, which could not be obtained in any other way. Although only a small part of the project, interrogation in technical and biomedical field has produced at least 8,973 items for the files of military intelligence, GHC-IPU. Of these items, 1,764 have been published up to December 1950 in the ULAT Exploitation Majestic series. The coverage of the New Mexico incidents from the overall intelligence point of view has been very good. After the panel's review was initiated, GHQ-IPU published in March 1951 two summary Majestic series, number 98 and number 99 of the series titled New Medical Facilities for Biological Warfare, New Genetic and Pharmaceutical Development Programs. Read that again. New Genetic and Pharmaceutical Development Programs. This is being put out by the committee. The panel collates all this information, writes a series of papers on it. They're talking about genetics here, pharmaceutical development programs. This is starting to sound ominous. These summary reports have apparently made of such of the AEC file material, since 6,014 items are now reported as published medical items, quote-unquote, in the interrogation reports. for the clarification of published reports or elaboration of the information of fragmentary nature, resort may be had to the AEC files of unpublished data, as well as to the possibility of reinterrogating the sources. Reinterrogating the sources. And from that, I don't know if they mean reinterrogating the aliens that they captured. Point C, review of the military assessment. With current deployment obligations, troop commitments, and few air groups with standby fighters with radar capability, the Joint Chiefs are unable at the present time to effect a complete and all-encompassing defense plan that would guarantee the protection and well-functioning of the national political order. Personnel, material, and logistical requirements for such a defense would deplete current resources. If such a crisis should occur in government failure to defend and assure the public's trust, it is the belief of the Joint Chiefs that the following would ensue: insecurity and mistrust, employment of subversive agents, infiltration, incitement of disorder, and chaos to disrupt normal economy and undermine popular support of government and its leaders, seizure of authority without reference to the will of the people. Point D, technology. At present, the ability to reconstruct the technology that may be eons ahead of us, the boost to our current efforts would be incalculable. Areas such as aircraft and missile design would benefit only after a working understanding has been achieved. Weapon sciences will follow. Point E, nuclear weapons development. Miniaturization of atomic bomb components is the goal of the AEC and the AFSWP. That's the aforementioned Armed Forces Special Weapons Project at Sandia. Studies at MIT indicate that such a technology is within reach before the decade is out. The apparent use of microcircuitry found on the recovered plan form indicates that miniaturization, low power transmission, light conductor sensitive components are required for interplanetary space travel. Atomic engines and nuclear propulsion technologies could be advanced based upon current use of hydrogen and electromagnetic research and weapons components development in US and UK. Point F, biological warfare programs. BW programs in US and UK are in field test stages. Discovery of new virus and bacterial agents as lethal that serums derived by genetic research can launch medical science into unheard of fields of biology. The samples extracted from bodies found in New Mexico have yielded new strains of a retrovirus not totally understood, but give promise of the ultimate BW weapon. I don't know why I'm laughing, but give promise of the ultimate BW weapon. These guys could find a crash-landed universal healer. You aim it at anything, it'll heal anything. Dead plant, you aim it at it, it can make it grow. And if they found one of these things laying in the desert, they would find a way to weaponize it and turn it into a weapon of mass destruction. That's how these people think. The danger lies in the spread of airborne and bloodborne outbreaks of disease in large populations with no medical cures available. Note that they didn't say anything about the dreaded C word, stabines, right? Genetic and pharmaceutical development programs, point G. Current research in US and UK can be accelerated when studies are complete. Understanding the human makeup through EBE, that's extraterrestrial biological entity, research will bring a varied wealth of information in how cells replicate themselves and may help in developing new drugs and programs. Healthcare industries are considered the best source of R&D for DoD programs. So they're going to farm out to the medical industry some of this research. They may not tell them what they're working on, but they'll contract some other companies involved in healthcare, so-called. Point H, new materials development. Conclusions reached by the Air Materiel Command in 1948. Upon the close examination of the material structure of the Corona and Ascura Peak, New Mexico sites, compelled the Air Force to launch a new machinability research program. Samples tested and evaluated by the AMC suggested that future materials would have to incorporate new alloys and composites if space exploration and hypersonic dynamics are to be achieved. As a result, new machining techniques are underway for high-temperature alloys and titanium. And remember, it was titanium that was the main hull material for the SR-71. Planned future rocket development programs. There have been a number of failed high-altitude rocket launches. Study radiation effects on living organisms. The Air Force's Project Blossom, conducted at Holloman Air Force Base, is but one example. V-2 rocket launches at the White Sands Proving Ground, New Mexico, have been knocked down by undetermined jamming. The source of the jamming is believed to come from UFO sightings on or near the range. So the ETs are effing with the people that are launching the missiles. Because remember, even before the dust settled in World War II, and certainly in the immediate aftermath of World War II, they brought a lot of the rocket engineers and technicians and scientists from these programs, came under a number of different project names, Project Paperclip, Operation Overcast, etc. And it was coordinated out of the Pentagon, headed up by Dr. H.P. Robertson, who later infamously headed up the CIA's so-called Robertson panel. Continuing, guidance systems are believed to be vulnerable, and this presents a clear and present danger. Such keeper flights carrying nuclear weapons are too horrific to contemplate. Shielding of systems and circuits are underway. Point J. Nuclear Propulsion Development Programs. The AEC, that's Atomic Energy Commission, and NEPA, that stands for Nuclear Energy for Propulsion of Aircraft, NEPA, are currently conducting research for advanced technologies in atomic engines and radical propulsion studies. Systems studies at Los Alamos, New Mexico, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and at Langley, Virginia, are attempting to duplicate the water drive and plastic core elements found on the engine being kept at Holloman Air Force Base. Water drive? Now, what's interesting is Leonard Stringfield had a discussion with Dr. Robert Spencer Carr, I believe that was his name, and Spencer Carr was aware of a crash retrieval. Dr. Robert Spencer Carr had spoken to one of the participants of a crash retrieval, and I can't remember, don't quote me on this, I think it may have been in Florida, I'm going by memory. This is one of Leonard Stringfield's status reports, and Robert Spencer Carr made Leonard Stringfield promise that Stringfield would not reveal the source of Spencer Carr's information, at least until after Dr. Robert Spencer Carr died. Dr. Robert Spencer Carr went on to say that the craft that was recovered in Florida, and this could have been years after this report was written, that the craft that was recovered in Florida had a propulsion system where water essentially was the main fuel, a water propulsion energy system. So right off the bat, you have a issue with the petrochemical companies. Water is so abundant on this planet, and here are these aliens flying around with a propulsion system which utilizes in some fashion water as a fuel source. That will absolutely upend everything, because you can't play the scarcity model with water, because this is essentially a water planet. 3/4 of the globe is covered in water, and there are gigantic lakes as well, inland lakes. So it's not a question of scarcity. They can't use the scarcity model if some of these alien craft are powered by a water drive. So let me continue reading. System studies at Los Alamos, New Mexico, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and at Langley, Virginia, are attempting to duplicate the water drive and plastic core elements found on the engine being kept at Holloman Air Force Base. Integration of hydrogen base fuels and electro-hydrodynamic technology may open up for us development of super aerodyne with Mach 5 capabilities. Point K, intelligence gathering and analysis. Based on what is known of the technology and intelligence of the visitors, it is fairly certain that there will be other sightings and encounters of a spectacular nature. As to purpose and modus operandi, we are not certain, but it is clear that if these visitors had conquest in mind, it would not be difficult for them, given their ability to penetrate our airspace at will and their ability to jam radio, telephone, television, and teletype transmissions, let alone power grids. So far, reports and sightings are blatant and deliberate, thus allowing our intelligence agencies to gather good data. As to the analysis of such reports, only a continuous wave of sightings and encounters worldwide would provide enough data for a clear understanding of intent. Point L, foreign policy and national security. To date, only Great Britain, Canada, and the Soviet Union are contacted and appraised in the event invasion is imminent. It is the current policy of the administration that no other foreign countries will be consulted or advised. The national security status of the Majestic operation exceeds that of the H-bomb development. And that's a key point. Kudos to Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan show, former Navy SEAL, and he was also a former operative for the CIA. And he's got a really interesting podcast. And he's talked about his own post-Navy career, where he became essentially a drug trafficker. Kudos to him for coming clean about all that. And recently he had a guest, and the subject of Paul Benowitz came up. And the guest referenced Greg Bishop's book. Greg Bishop's thesis that the PSYOP perpetrated against Paul Benowitz was designed to make Paul Benowitz think that what was really going on in Archuleta Mesa was alien activity and an alien base there as a distraction to mislead him, because what they were really trying to keep secret was the development of beam weapons there at Sandia. That is a non-starter, because as I've said before, and I'll say it again, we know from the letter Dr. Robert Sarbarker wrote to researcher William Steinman many years ago that, and this is based on a discussion that Canadian Department of Transport scientist Wilbert Smith had with Dr. Robert Sarbarker. Dr. Robert Sarbarker told Wilbert Smith that the secret UFO research and development program was 2 points higher than the secrecy security around the hydrogen bomb, 2 points higher. And also in this Majestic document I've just read, they make the same point that the secrecy revolving around UFOs, flying saucers, and aliens is higher than the H-bomb. So when Greg Bishop and any other person comes along saying, oh, that PSYOP at Paul Benowitz, which was, like I said earlier, run by Richard Doty, the PSYOP was intended to mislead Paul Benowitz and make him think there was an alien base there in the Archuleta Mesa mountain range as a way to distract him from the real secret, which was weapons developments there at Sandia. That's a non-starter. That is nonsense, and I'll say that over and over again. The reality of the alien presence is the most highly secure, deepest, darkest secret on planet Earth, because it underpins everything. Continuing with the Majestic report, point seven, I'm skipping down a ways. Point seven, there were 5 recovered bodies, 2 of which were found in a severely damaged escape cylinder, and the remaining 3 were found some distance away from the cylinder. All 5 appeared to have suffered from sudden decompression and heat suffocation. Recovery and autopsies of the occupants are covered in detail in a separate study, Gray Suit, within Project 612 and 621, ULAT Exploitation Majestic Series 4, pages 40 to 102, as a result of damage sustained from unknown causes. Point 8. The panel was concerned over the contamination of several SED personnel, that's Special Engineering Detachment personnel from the Armed Forces Special Weapons Project at Sandia Base. The panel was concerned over the contamination of several SED personnel upon coming in contact with debris near the power plant. One technician was overcome and collapsed when he attempted the removal of a body. Another medical technician went into a coma 4 hours after placing a body in a rubber body bag. All four were rushed to Los Alamos for observation. All four later died of seizures and profuse bleeding. All four were wearing protective suits when they came in contact with body fluids from the occupants. Autopsies on the four dead SED technicians are not conclusive. It is believed that the four may have suffered from some form of toxin or a highly contagious disease. Tissue samples are currently being kept at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Point 10. The panel was also concerned with the detection of airborne release of radiation over the state of New Mexico. AFTAC detachment from McClellan Air Force Base has conducted several airborne monitor flights over Site L2. Radiation readings indicate a high neutron count was recorded as a plane flew over the site. Neutron count dropped off as the plane flew a considerable distance from the site. A report has been filed with the, I can't read that. Detection of a high-altitude explosion was recorded by a Project Mogul constant-level balloon on 4 July 1947. Radar from White Sands Proving Ground and Holloman Air Force Base also detected a surge. Moving down to point 10, and this is important. MAGCOM 1, I'm assuming that is Vannevar Bush, Dr. Vannevar Bush's MAGCOM 1, with assistance of the panel, persuades the president to establish the Psychological Strategy Board on 4 April 1951. The Psychological Strategy Board was headed up by another MJ-12 member, Gordon Gray. So Majestic had a hand, the decisive hand, in creating the Psychological Strategy Board, which played the key role in developing the disinformation, psychological warfare operations, propaganda, etc., that basically concealed and covered up the existence of Majestic 12 as well as the reality of the alien presence. Gordon Gray also, incidentally, and I don't think coincidentally, was the committee chairman for the Oppenheimer security clearance hearing. And Gordon Gray, and I've said this before, would have known as a member of Majestic 12 committees, he would have known that Oppenheimer had firsthand information about aliens, alien technology, alien crash retrievals. Because as I pointed out in some of these Majestic documents, Oppenheimer was present at the crash sites at Roswell and also took part if the information from the William Steinman and Wendell Stevens book, UFO Crash at Aztec, that information referred to Oppenheimer as taking part in the recovery and the analysis of the craft that was recovered at Aztec, New Mexico in March 1948. So here is the Psychological Strategy Board being set up at the behest of Majestic 12. And you constantly hear people say, aliens are just a distraction. It's a psyop. These people are morons. When you consider that the Psychological Strategy Board was set up specifically to cover up the reality of the alien presence, that key players in the Psychological Strategy Board included C.D. Jackson, who was an editor for Time Life magazine. Time Magazine, Life Magazine, it was a family of magazines owned by skull and bonesman Henry Luce. So the psychological strategy board was a very high level operation. Continuing. Point 12. On 6 December 1950, MAGCOM 4 alerts MAGCOM 1 of a breach in DEW, that's distant early warning, Greenland, of a UFO on a southwesterly course. HQIPU, that's Headquarters Interplanetary Phenomenon Unit, alerted and dispatched a scientific team to El Indio Guerrero on the Texas-Mexico border. MAGCOM 4 orders a recovery team from Project Stork and Moondust to crash site. Teams transport debris from crash site to Air Defense Command Holloman Air Force Base and to Atomic Energy Commission laboratories at Sandia, New Mexico. And that's the well-known crash retrieval along the Texas-Mexico border. There was, no pun intended, a Mexican standoff, from what I understand, between the American forces and the Mexican forces. Eventually, the American forces got their way and were able to recover the debris and transport it out of the area. Number 15, and this is a subject that came up with Judith Erba on her show. She asked me to come on and talk about the Vatican's response to the reality of the extraterrestrial presence. Well, the Majestic Papers deal specifically with this. Point 15, at the request of panel member Cardinal Francis Spellman, met with the president to discuss the containment within the Catholic Church and its hierarchy of religious speculation if mass sightings occur. Such containment was successful during the 1947 sightings when Cardinal Spellman met with the Secretary of War on 29 June. The president has been briefed on Defense Plan 4P, I think it's 4 or 4P, which was written in part by the panel member. And there are other Majestic Papers which allude to Cardinal Francis Spellman's visits to certain facilities, bases in New Mexico, while all this was going on in the late 1940s. Continuing, point 19, MAGCOM 4, a member of the panel, was instrumental in supporting the creation of the Air Force's Scientific Advisory Board, which MAGCOM 5 endorsed. Point 20, MAGCOM 5 recommended to the Air Force Chief of Staff that the top secret report, Where We Stand, and that was written by a panel set up by Dr. Theodore von Karman, be the basis for ULAT development. MAGCOM 5 urged the Chief of Staff to enact the ideas of another report, Science, the Key to Air Supremacy, that was also written by Dr. Theodore von Karman and his committee. Major General Curtis LeMay, Staff Director of Research and Development, seconded MAGCOM 5's views. So LeMay endorsed the idea to use the papers written by Dr. Theodore von Karman as the basis for development of the ULAT, which is the recovered alien crafts. Point 22. On June 15, 1947, Dr. Theodore von Karman chaired the first meeting of the Scientific Advisory Board and discussed how the Air Forces could prepare for a possible air attack in light of the numerous UFO sightings over the U.S. Point 23. On 14 May 1948, MAGCOM 4 arranged for the promulgation of Air Force Regulation 20-30, which restored the powers of the Scientific Advisory Board as agreed upon by Karman and LeMay in 1946. Point 24, MAGCOM 4 had a prepared speech read at a meeting of scientific advisors on 7 April 1949, highlighting new Air Force R&D organization and structures on UFO research for ULAT. Karman enlisted the aid of a panel member to persuade MAGCOM 4 to endorse a separate establishment free from Air Materiel Command and Pentagon control. That is one of the most important points. And off the top of my head, I can't tell you if MAGCOM 4 was General Hoyt Vandenberg or General Nathan Twining. I know that each one of the original panel members were dubbed Majestic 1, MJ 1, MAGCOM 1. That would be, I believe, Dr. Vannevar Bush. And then you had these other members, and each had a number, right? So when you keep hearing me refer to MAGCOM 4, MAGCOM 5, I'm guessing that 4 and 5 refer to General Hoyt Vandenberg and General Nathan Twining. But I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. Point being is that this is an important point right here. I'll read that again. Point 24. MAGCOM 4, again, I don't know which one that is. Hoyt Vandenberg, General Nathan Twining, one of them, or could have been the Director of Central Intelligence. MAGCOM 4 had a prepared speech read at a meeting of scientific advisors on 7 April 1949, highlighting new Air Force R&D organization and structures on UFO research for ULAT. Again, ULAT refers to Unidentified Lenticular Aeroplane Planform. That's the recovered craft, the one that was most, that remained most intact, that they could use as the model, the basis for developing their own alien technology, flying saucers, if you will. Carmen enlisted the aid of a panel member to persuade MAGCOM 4 to endorse a separate establishment free from Air Materiel Command and Pentagon control. That's key because Carmen had his own corporation, his own aerospace company, Aerojet General. He also founded, like I said earlier, the Jet Propulsion Lab. Carmen was an expert in rockets and engines and all kinds of aircraft and propulsion, and as we've seen, with alien technology. And here he is pushing the notion that essentially private industry, aerospace corporations, should play a pivotal role apart from and not under the supervision and control of the Pentagon and Air Materiel Command. Again, Air Materiel Command was headed up by General Nathan Twining at the time of Roswell. And of course, Twining later became Chief of Staff of the Air Force and then Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Air Materiel Command is where the Foreign Technology Division is and where the secret UFO alien technology program was headquartered out of, if that's proper English. And here's Von Karman, who has his own aerospace corporation, encouraging Majestic to allow a system set up whereby private industry, private corporations can work with alien technology and develop a standalone system. This could have been the point when the aerospace corporations really came to the fore. Ben Rich famously said that these alien technologies are tied up in these special access programs run by these aerospace corporations, and it would take an act of God to pry them out of these private corporations in order for them to benefit humanity. So is this where we see the division between the analysis and development and R&D under military auspices, and then it broke away where the private corporations, aerospace corporations, Rockefeller, Rothschild, mostly Rothschild controlled, eventually develop a guiding, controlling hand in the exploitation, development of alien technology? This is an important point I'm making here. Just a couple more items I want to read to you because I feel they're important. Further down the report, Annex C, point number 2. In the annals of warfare, mass disappearances of soldiers and their equipment are rare but are on record. In the 18th century, during the Spanish War of Succession, 4,000 soldiers were reported to have disappeared, together with their weapons and equipment, horses included. In 1885, about 600 French colonial soldiers disappeared near Saigon, French Indochina, without a trace of them nor their equipment. On August 21, 1915, members of the New Zealand Army Corps' 1st Field Company signed sworn statements that they saw the 1/4th Norfolk Regiment disappear in an unusually thick brown cloud, which seemed to move and rose upward and vanished. There were no traces of the regiment nor their equipment. No explanation can be found in the historical records of the Imperial War Museum archives. In 1939, over 2,900 Chinese nationalist troops were reported missing from their camp just south of Nanking. Again, men, equipment, guns were missing, though campfires and mess tents were undisturbed. During the Pacific campaign, there have been instances where whole platoons and larger units seem to have disappeared without any sign of combat or a struggle. Men, equipment, weapons vanish without a trace. In all instances, the disappearances occurred in tropical climate and in the heat of battle or near combat scenes. I had read about the disappearance of the Norfolk Regiment in the First World War. What had happened was the unit had marched up a hill, and there was low ground-hugging fog atop this hill. The unit walked up to the hill, and then after a while, the ground fog lifted up. Keep in mind, this is a regiment of soldiers. The ground fog lifted up. Now the hill is empty. There are no soldiers on the hill anymore. The cloud lifted up, and then it took on the shape, if memory serves, of a rectangular loaf of bread shape, and it got into line with several other similarly shaped clouds. Now, just picture this. Now, there are several of these loaf of bread shaped clouds. They're all in a line, and then they flew away. And if memory serves, they flew away against the wind. And that was an entire regiment basically being abducted. Interesting how they also mention the Pacific Island campaigns, because the Solomon Islands, as some of you know, is a real hotspot for alien, UFO, and giant activity. Continuing, point number 3, missing aircraft, pilots, and crews are of special concern to the military when no explanations fit the usual reasons outside of combat. One such incident is the disappearance of a flight of 5 U.S. Navy TBM-3 Avenger torpedo bombers from NAS Fort Lauderdale on 5 December 1945. This is Flight 19. While no explanation as to why navigation instruments on all 5 aircraft could have failed at the same time, and efforts to rescue the 14 crewmen were unsuccessful, it is believed that Flight 19 encountered a phenomenon of celestial nature. The last known radio transmission from the instructor pilot was heard by a ham operator: "Don't come after us. They look like they are from outer space. I'm at 2,300 feet. Don't come after me." After one of the most intensive air-sea rescue operations in U.S. naval history, the Naval Board of Inquiry said, "We were not able to make even a good guess as to what had happened." And that's not even the end of it, because if memory serves, the Navy sent out a PBY Catalina to look for Flight 19, and that disappeared too. So, I mean, you add the crew of a PBY Catalina to the missing crew members of the 5 Avenger planes, that's quite a lot of airmen and air crews. And then point number 4, they talk about the well-known Thomas Mantell case. I won't get into that. Reading further down, point number 5, from 1949 to late 1950, there have been several crashes of B-36 bombers on routine Arctic patrol that bear all the earmarks of the Mantell incident. Well, since they bring it up, let me read part 4 to you. On 7 January 1948, an Air National Guard F-51 pilot was lost near Godman Air Force Base, Kentucky, after being directed to lead his flight of four F-51s by the tower. Captain Thomas Mantell pursued a large metallic object alone after two pilots returned to Godman Air Force Base, and finally his wingman was ordered to return to the field. It is believed that Mantell was following a large, structured object not in the flight path of a classified Navy Skyhook balloon. Mantell radioed Godman Tower that he was at 22,000 feet and still climbing. At one point, Mantell said that the object had paced his aircraft for several minutes, then would speed up. His last transmission to the tower was, quote, "It appears to be a metallic object, and it is of tremendous size. It appears to be a metallic object, or possibly the reflection of sun from a metallic object." When Godman personnel arrived at the crash scene, Mantell's F-51 was found in many pieces, not in large sections as what one would find from a free stick descent. The wreckage contained unusual damage, as if Mantell's plane was repeatedly hit by shotgun blasts. Now, that's interesting, because the late British UFO researcher Anthony Dodd spoke with a retired U.S. military guy who told him that when they found the craft, Mantell's craft, it had all these holes in it, all these perforations throughout the body of the wreckage. Continuing. Okay, now we get down to the part about the B-36s. From 1949 to late 1950, there have been several crashes of B-36 bombers on routine Arctic patrol that bear all the earmarks of the Mantell incident. None of the crews were found. The atomic bombs were not recovered, thus creating a serious problem for the Air Force when nuclear weapons are lost over friendly countries. Boy, howdy. The death of the two Air Force counterintelligence officers in the crash of their B-25 aircraft en route to Hamilton Air Force Base, California, after interviewing two auxiliary Coast Guard men who reported six UFOs over Maury Island, Washington, in June 1947. Counterintelligence Corps agent Chrisman had spoken to Kenneth Arnold, who on 26 June 1947 had reported a flight of UFOs over Mount Rainier, Washington, and filed his report after he had spoken to Captain Davidson and Lieutenant Brown. The material given to Davidson and Brown was believed to come from Maury Island and may be celestial fragments containing metal from a nuclear reactor from a UFO. Fragments were turned over to CIA agent Shaw, and Chrisman was ordered to the Alaskan Air Defense Command for assignment to Project Ivy. Point number seven, aerial interference with military aircraft has demonstrated the ability to observe our air operations in war and peacetime conditions. During the war, over 900 near-miss incidents were reported by Allied pilots and crews in all theater of operations. One of the most dramatic near-miss encounters occurred on 14 October 1943, 8th Air Force Mission 115 over Schweinfurt, Germany. B-17 crews reported many formations of silvery disks flying down into the B-17 formations. Several times during the bombing mission, large objects were seen following the disk descent into the formations. Unlike previous reports, no engine failures or airframe damage was reported. After the surrender of Nazi Germany, German Air Force fighter pilots were interrogated by Air Force intelligence concerning Mission 115. German Air Force did not have any aircraft above our bombers at that time. So I just wanted to make this point clear that the military and civilian intelligence agencies at that time were well aware, at least elements of the military intelligence community were well aware, that alien craft were responsible for the disappearance and the loss of aircraft. Note how the report mentions B-36 bombers loaded with nuclear weapons disappearing in the Arctic Circle. Now, there are many people, some of whom I absolutely respect and hold in high esteem. And they write off all the Majestic Papers as being a hoax. Well, I would argue that somehow, some way, the authors of this particular report knew that there were disappearances in the Arctic Circle and around Alaska in particular. So how did the authors of this report, reported to be a hoax, have foreknowledge of what we would now know as the Alaskan Triangle? Now, granted, the report didn't specifically mention Alaska, but it did mention that the Arctic Circle was where a number of aircraft disappearances, including B-36 bombers, which were very large bombers. They were truly a transcontinental bomber, the B-36s. How they had disappeared, and they had disappeared with nuclear weapons in the Arctic Circle. And we know from the late Colonel Wendell Stevens that Air Force intelligence was deeply interested and indeed monitored the alien activity around Alaska. We know that the aforementioned Tony Dodd had developed sources within NATO who told him that naval vessels in NATO task forces often encountered alien craft in the Arctic Circle. There's something big going on. Well, just as there's something big going on in Antarctica, likewise, there's something big going on in the Arctic Circle. Point of relevance is that if this was a hoax, how could they have known that aircraft were disappearing in Alaska? The Alaskan Triangle and the nearby environs has accounted for over 20,000 missing people since they've been keeping records in Alaska. 20,000. And keep in mind, Pat Price was remote viewing that underground base beneath Mount Hayes, where he saw aliens and human military working together. He was bumped off. He was killed. So where there's smoke, there's fire, folks. This is an important document, and I will provide a link to this particular Majestic 12 annual report so you can read it in its entirety, and I encourage you to do so. So I've given you an earful from the fifth annual report of Majestic 12, and I would argue that everything that I've said thus far in this commentary has direct relevance to what's going on today. Because as I've said before, I'm trying to create a word picture, if you will, of how this came about, where you start off with these crash retrievals, initial R&D, analysis, here come the private corporations elbowing their way in at the behest of Dr. Theodore von Karman and whoever was behind him. And then eventually we have a joint alien human operation going. Remember, I referred to cultural connections, cultural, that the Majestic paper referred to, of wanting to establish cultural relations. And everything from that point on, my labs, military abductions, the hybridization agenda, etc., etc., it all ties in. Anyhow, we reached the end of this first segment. You've been listening to Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and I'll see the members at the top of the next segment. Bye for now.